You're listening to LawPod UK from the creators of the UK Human Rights Blog. It's a podcast that discusses developments across all aspects of civil and public law in the United Kingdom. All the comments are current at the time of podcast publication. LawPod UK is produced by the barristers at 1 Crown Office Row and is presented by Rosalind English.
I'm Rosalind English, and I'll be talking to Poppy Remington-Pounder, who's one of our regular contributors to the Human Rights Blog. In our conversation to follow, she'll be expanding on the recent political and case law developments that she's reported on in the latest News Roundup post, which you'll find on the blog. So, Poppy, thank you very much for being our second volunteer in the line of, I hope, will be a regular series of podcasts and news updates from the Roundup team, as well as other interviews from members of chambers. I'd just like to start really with your latest news item, which is we think there's maybe good news for the Human Rights Act and the European Convention on Human Rights in this election.
Yes, Labour and Conservative parties have both indicated in their manifestos that they want to retain the Human Rights Act and the Convention. This is particularly good news with regard to the Conservative manifesto because previously, the Conservative Party had expressed scepticism over the Convention and the Human Rights Act, and there have been multiple reports that leaving the Convention would be a key part of the next Conservative manifesto. So it's promising to see that the Convention and the Human Rights Act have been thrown a lifeline for now, at least. Even so, the Conservatives haven't completely abandoned their plan eventually to leave the Convention and to repeal the Human Rights Act. It seems that such a campaign will feature in future elections after the Brexit negotiations have been concluded, as they indicated in their manifesto.
You mentioned that that apart from the convention rights that we sort of know and understand enshrined in the usual documents, other rights feature prominently in both parties' manifestos.
One big issue is leaving the EU because obviously there are a huge number of rights that we get from our EU law, and both parties who are aware of this have pledged to protect worker and consumer rights, but in slightly different fashion. The Conservatives obviously have their Great Repeal Bill, whereas Labour would like an EU Rights and Protections Bill. It is interesting that the Conservatives have said that they will not make the Charter of Fundamental Rights into law in their bill. But other issues as well, they clearly are trying to appeal to more voters. Immigration, that's a big one because of the concerns over immigration, excessive immigration levels. The Conservative manifesto has emphasised that they want to help asylum seekers, but on their own terms. So they're showing that they want to take control of immigration by selecting those refugees from outside of the UK rather than those who've made it to the UK. Labour, on the other hand, for immigration, are clearly also trying to draw in voters who are anxious about immigration levels. They've pledged to abolish free movement, and they've emphasised making a distinction between migration for labour and migration for families. So they're sort of clearly trying to promise that they are sort of safeguarding UK citizens' jobs and so on. And employment, that's another big area. The zero-hours contracts have been a hot topic this year amid all the case law over the gig economy, and both parties have reacted to this. Labour said they will ban such contracts, while the Conservatives, who are actually currently awaiting a report, have emphasised that they want to do more to protect workers' interests. It looks like the Conservatives are trying to emphasise that they're looking out for workers' rights, so it seems that they're trying to sway typical Labour supporters. Of course, on the other hand, the workers seem more likely to be able to seek a remedy under the proposed Labour manifesto, since they plan to scrap employment tribunal fees, which had undergone a huge hike recently. Labour also, as a side point, they want to lower the voting age to 16, so they're clearly building on the fact that they want to appeal to younger voters.
It's very interesting, given the positions that the parties both took, Labour and Conservative respectively, in the days when the Human Rights Act was introduced, because the Labour Party wants ownership of the human rights. It was their baby, but now it's almost as if the Conservatives have had it so long that Labour's got to come up with something different.
they're definitely trying to try and emphasise lots of areas of rights that they're trying to protect.
The Muslim advocacy group CAGE has been in the news recently. Can you tell us what this is and what's been going on?
So CAGE is a group that works with countries that have been affected by the so-called war on terror. It's sort of an advocacy group, big NGO. They were spurred on by what was happening in Guantanamo Bay, so they were sort of reacting to the detention there. And Mohamed Rabbani, who's the international director of CAGE, he was stopped at Heathrow last November after flying in for the Middle East, and he refused to give over his passwords to his electronic devices because he said he'd been collecting evidence from a client in a case on about torture. He's been charged under the Terrorism Act, and this is sort of for failing to comply with these stop and search measures. And CAGE has naturally been incredibly critical of this decision. And Mr. Rabbani has pointed out that such a practice may have serious implications for lawyers and human rights activists and journalists. It's also interesting, Mr. Rabbani, he's claimed that he has been stopped on numerous occasions. I think he said some 20 times. And, of course, you can't help but think of one of Liberty, one of their main criticisms of the Act, was the fact that it can be used in a discriminatory fashion, basing suspicions on stereotypes, which is what Mr. Rabbani seems to be suggesting has happened here. And so he's going to be in court in June, and it will be interesting to see what happens and what falls out of this case.
But there's another Muslim case that features the right to religion.
Yes, it was about a case in the Bahamas. The Bahamian Defence Force, one of their officers who had converted to Islam, during the parade where they have prayers, he'd previously been allowed to excuse himself from the Christian prayers, but a new memorandum they issued in 2006 said that he was not allowed to exclude himself and has been required to participate. And Mr. Larimore objected to such a memorandum, and the Privy Council did say that they found that it was unconstitutional to oppress someone's freedom of conscience in this way. It was quite an interesting case, actually, because one of the Defence Force's main arguments was that by making sure that everyone participated in these prayers, it encouraged discipline. But of course, as Lord Mance, who was giving the main judgment, pointed out, discipline appeared to have been fine before then.
It's interesting that this case has arisen in the light of what you were talking about earlier on in your roundup. We haven't touched on this. The reach of human rights protections into military, army, defence situations, and that's certainly something that the Conservative government is wanting to remove. Do you think that the appellant in this case had a good case, or do you think there is something else pertaining to army and military situations in which perhaps civilian rights should not have quite so much traction?
I think that he does have a strong case in this instance. He actually, I mean, particularly in this one, it was about a parade, it was sort of prayers and so on, and I think it's very important that people should still be allowed to express themselves and have their own personal freedom of conscience, as we say. And it's quite a sort of different kettle of fish to the Conservatives saying that they want to derogate from certain rights during actual conflict. In either scenario, I think that it should be so important that we should be safeguarding rights at all times.
But maybe there is a sort of line to be drawn between army discipline and the fog of war. You report on an interesting reference by the Netherlands to the European Court of Justice regarding the rights of third country nationals, that's nationals from outside the EU, whose children are EU nationals.
Yes, so the lead individual in this case was a Venezuelan national who'd originally come to the Netherlands on a tourist visa and had a child from a relationship with someone from the Netherlands. And she is now the sole primary carer for this child. And the court have made it clear that in cases such as this, third country nationals who are residing in an EU member state and who are primary carers of a child who is an EU national may well themselves have a right to reside in an EU state. Their primary concern in this case is clearly that they want to safeguard the rights of these children who are EU nationals and who should be able to enjoy the benefits of their EU citizenship. And the court in this case has emphasised that even if alternative care is possible for the child, so even if in deciding whether to grant residency, the father was able to look after the child, even so, the third country national still may be given residence given the nature of the relationship and the dependency between the two. So it seems clear that for domestic courts now, when they are applying this case law, a huge amount will come down to the assessment of the facts of the case and the relationship and the extent of dependency.
LawPod UK is presented by Rosalind English and produced by One Crown Office Row. For more editions of LawPod UK, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and recommend us to a friend.